I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into a new episode of The Memo on this Wednesday, November the 2nd. I'm Brad Locke with W. Derek Russell.
And I'm useless.
Okay.
And or hungry.
I'm hungry.
Mostly useless today.
Well, me too. Well, I can understand why.
Big baseball game tonight?
There's a game.
It's been several in a row here. It's just late nights watching these games.
Down 3-1. You were feeling bad, not feeling too good about things, but the Cubbies, they haven't let you down yet.
I wouldn't say I never felt bad. I was just more hopeful.
Yeah. The percentages were against you at 3-1. But
well, let's be honest, Brad. The percentages are always against me.
Well, and against
I'm used to that.
But
the Cubs. But, you know, mostly me.
But it's a one-game series. All the marvels tonight.
I love a good game set.
And listen, I mean, it's going to be a great game. The series has had its share of blowouts, but it's had some great moments and some great games. Last night was a blowout, but I know Addison Russell had the big home run.
Yes.
You related to him?
Slam. No, but that's actually my daughter's name.
Addison?
Wesley Addison.
Wesley Addison. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Named
so
after?
She likes him. No.
He hadn't been around that long.
He was still in high school when that child came.
Jeez. Yeah, he's like 22, isn't he?
Second youngest ever to hit a grand slam in the World Series.
It's ridiculous.
Is that correct?
Yeah, probably.
I heard something along those lines, but I don't know exactly.
I believe that.
I mean, call up the Elias Sports Bureau here and check with them.
Right after Mickey Mantle.
So the Cubs and the Indians, you got Hendricks against Kluber, so you got a great pitching matchup. I think Hendricks led the NL in ERA,
I
believe, 2.13. Kluber's their ace. Here's the only thing you might want to be concerned about. The fact that Chapman has thrown a lot of pitches the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
But I was at the Cafe 212 this morning and overheard somebody, Kevin Kirkpatrick was actually in there.
He's a Cubs fan.
Yeah,
right?
He was wearing his Cubs shirt. Yeah, he was. A funny story, I have to tell you about that too in a minute, my exchange I had with him. But somebody was saying, well, you know, Chapman, actually, he's not as good when he's, quote, fresh because he tends to be wild, which... I don't know. That's just a little bit of spin job there.
Yeah,
but he's obviously done well
beyond
so far.
Tired. I mean, this is the opposite of fresh.
I think, but I think he'll have the adrenaline. And I mean, did the Cubs just not have faith in anyone else in their bullpen? Because I thought they had a pretty decent pen. But they've been going to Chapman really early the last two games. And then the Indians have their bullpen very fresh. Andrew Miller hadn't pitched in a couple of games. Got some other guys in there that haven't pitched. So that's,
did
that'd
he
be my
at all in Chicago? I don't think he did. I don't think he has since
who?
Cleveland.
Miller.
I think it was just the last two games.
I think he did in 3-4.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, he didn't in 5-6. The two Cubs wins, of course.
The bad thing when you get to 7 is they start running together, and you have to figure out which one was which.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I'm heading to Cleveland after we get done recording today. So,
So hopefully
going to blow $20,000.
Listen, hopefully we're not boring.
I'm just
going
to stand outside. I'll just stand outside.
Hopefully we're not boring people with this baseball talk. But I'm a huge baseball fan, and even if you're not a huge baseball fan, this is like history in the making. Okay, like seriously, as far as sports goes, this is about as big as it gets. The Cubs with a chance to break that 108-year. Drought. And
or
Cleveland,
Indians,
I mean, hello.
Right.
It's been, 60-something years since they've won.
Yeah, it was the 48, 47?
48.
Did y'all see the stat as the broadcast went off last night, the number of days it's been for each team?
Like a million.
It was like 20,000 for Cleveland
there's
and 40,000 for Chicago.
There's a Twitter account
that
for Cubs that will just up a day every day. It's a rank on the counter.
But for each of them, it was... but no, I don't... we were just talking off-air about you just... focusing today, I know, and it wasn't nearly as momentous because of how long it's been for the Cubs, but a couple years ago when the Giants played in a game 7, and I sometimes still look back and like, I can't believe I worked that day, and it's just, it's a big day.
Yeah.
I was looking at these numbers.
It'll be a fun night.
Found the numbers. Chapman has thrown 62 pitches over the last two games, and they had a day off in there. So games 5-6. Cleveland, Andrew Miller, one of their really good relievers, hasn't pitched since Saturday. And their closer, Cody Allen, who's also really good, hasn't pitched since Sunday. So that's the one advantage that you might give Cleveland, plus they're at home, but that hasn't mattered. I mean, Chicago's won 2 of 3 in Cleveland so far.
Well,
so I'm predicting a Cubs win.
I think having Schwarber
like
is more
style.
Important than having home field advantage right now for the Cubs. So
yeah, home field
is better off on the road right now.
Home field
now.
Obviously doesn't matter. Cleveland won 2 in Chicago. So
I like the cut of your jib, Brad Locke.
Yeah, well, I know some people might say, no, don't jinx it. I'm like, dude, at this point, you got to face these.
I haven't washed my socks in 4 weeks.
You got to face these superstitions and, quote, curses and whatnot head on and just spit in their face, because at this point, you can't let those things hold you down. You can't. I mean, although let's not forget there is the possibility that something really crazy will happen in the ninth inning to cause the Cubs to lose. I mean,
no, let's not.
And if it does, I'll be honest. I want the Cubs to win, but if they lose, maybe this is kind of sick of me. I hope it's something like Bill Buckner-esque.
You know,
happens just for entertainment purposes.
That's kind of been the marquee of these Cubs this year.
I don't like your kind of jib anymore.
I'm all about being entertained. Those things, because I had that thought last night. Not that I wanted to happen the opposite, out of kind of horror, but
had that thought last night. I wish they'd lose.
I'm a fan of the macabre. Okay.
When Chapman came in and hurt himself, and then they had they have runner on first and one out, I guess, right before Addison Russell turned the double play to end the eighth, but. Here's Chapman, and he's hurt, and he's limping, and Cleveland's all of a sudden getting momentum, and I was kind of thinking, oh no, you know, is this going to be, you know, another one of those iconic horrors for the Cubs? But the two pitches later, they were out of it. I mean, you know, whereas teams in the past, you talk about the Bartman game, but of course that Bartman play, the Cubs are still ahead, but they let it get to their heads and everything spiraled.
You know who's the real GOAT from that game? Alex Gonzalez.
Exactly.
Who needs to send Steve Bartman a Christmas card every year thanking him for taking that off of him.
And that's kind of my point about this year's team, is when those moments happen, because there were a couple times last night when that could have happened. I mean, you know, when Chapman is limping, you know, on that play at first base, you know, I mean, that could have been it. But
right.
Then Baez turns a amazing double play
and
gets out of it. So,
anyway. Baez. You seen the way he tags people?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a young kid that does it better than most out there. But going back to the possibility of just the kind of inning that could destroy people. I saw this a couple months ago.
Why didn't you look at me?
As you're a Cubs fan.
Because you're going to be destroyed.
Keep an eye on Chris Bryant tonight. Okay, really good young player. Plays first base, right?
Yes.
Okay.
No, he plays third base.
Third base.
Rizzo,
I'm sorry.
Plays first.
That's right.
Rizzo.
All these young guys can't keep up. The Onion Sports did a funny thing a while back, an infographic. They call it strong side, weak side, looking at different athletes. And strong side, weak side for Chris Bryant. Strong side, the first thing they mention is, has yet to let down entire city of Chicago with career-defining playoff mistake.
There's still time.
So if a ground ball gets through the wickets in the ninth inning to bring the winning run home for Cleveland, the Onion will kind of have called it.
The Onion calls a lot of things already. Can this not be one of them?
Didn't they call Trump? I'm just saying.
Well,
there was that Onion headline that said, admit it, you want to see how far this Trump thing goes.
We're already facing a disaster next week. Let's not face two. So many days.
So anyway, most of you, some of you may be listening to this after the game, because, you know, people download and listen to this in the coming days. So you can laugh at me if I'm wrong about this, but I really do hope and think the Cubs will win tonight. Hope it's a close game. Hope it's dramatic.
Just saying, it's your head if they don't. But this
my head. Yeah. Listen, again, you can't believe in these. You can't blame it on the jinx.
Here's what you did. Here's what you did. I believe the Cubs are going to win, but here's all the reasons they probably won't. Let me tell you all this.
I'm just saying. This is what could happen. I think it could come down to relief pitching. But I think the Cubs have the better offense. I think they've got the better starting pitcher. And
better defense.
But it will not be a blowout.
But it's one game. Anything can happen. Cleveland, the Indians have their ace on the mound.
I don't know how good the Hendricks is at holding people long, because Cleveland does like to run.
Right. I think he's okay.
So
I think it's a 50-50 game. I honestly, after the Cubs went down 3-1, thought they'd win the next two because of the pitching matchup, especially the Indians having those guys on short rest. Kluber on short rest is one thing. Your other starters on short rest is another.
Right.
I think today is 50-50. Cubs are better, but the Indians have their ace, so who knows?
So who knows? So we got a good show to get to. Before we do, I mentioned heading an exchange with Kevin Kirkpatrick.
But before we do, I'm going to make fun of Derek some more.
No. I had an exchange with Kevin Kirkpatrick today at Cafe 212. He's like, I was telling him, hey, I'm going for the Cubs. I hope they win. You know, I'm a Cardinals fan. He's like, you know, I've been really surprised at how many Cardinals fans have told me they're pulling for the Cubs. And then I said, well, that's why we're the best fans in baseball. I think he cursed at me after that.
You got the minority over here with the San Francisco Giants across the desk from us who watches and roots on even when his team didn't make it.
Exactly.
You can't beat.
Hey.
at least one San Francisco Giant fan.
Hopefully you're flying the W tonight, Derek. That's what I hope. If not...
That's the underwear I wore.
If not, just don't come into work tomorrow. I wouldn't blame you. Feeling sick?
Cubs tweeted out a work excuse slip this morning.
I put it on Facebook today. I'm just like, you know, if you're a Cubs fan, especially if you're a Cubs fan living in Chicago, how can you even go to work today? You wouldn't be able to focus on anything.
Just Chicago has shut down. It's basically Ferris Bueller's day off in Chicago right
for
now.
For everybody.
For everybody. They're all dancing in the parade.
Oh, boy.
Imagine tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They need to get if they win, they need Matthew Broderick to lead the parade, the victory parade. They need to do. All right, so we got a good show today. We got Caleb Bedillion to come on to talk about this state flag issue. City Council voted Tuesday on a policy to keep the flag in place on city property. So that's kind of a big deal around here. A lot of reaction from people on social media, for sure. We've got Michaela Morris coming on to talk about the Affordable Care Act. It's expanded health care access to Mississippi residents, but also has led to challenges in the state. She'll explain. We've got, of course, Jenna Parsons talking about food. Wonder if she'll bring some.
Spoiler alert, she does not.
Dagnabbit. Okay. All of that and more here on The Memo, which is brought to you by Shoppers Value Foods. Formerly known as Palmer's, the locally owned grocery store still offers high quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. Visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main.
Caleb Bedillion joining us now. Caleb, this is pretty much one of those choose your own adventure books. You can talk about whatever you want to today.
Wow.
You have so much, you have a plethora of topics.
Yeah. The city council had a work session on Monday and a council meeting on Tuesday, and there's been a lot going on in the city.
They're done for the year. That's it. There's been no more meetings.
I have enough material to get me through the rest of the year. But yeah, choose your own adventure. Probably the what people are most interested in hearing about would be the Mississippi State flag policy approved by the city council as of Tuesday night after it was... brought up with little advance notice. So
how little?
As in when the agenda came out on Friday afternoon, there was a line on there to vote on a flag policy, and this was the first.
We're just gonna slide that in.
Anyone had heard of this? Fun fact, if you want to speak to the council, you have to submit your paperwork by 5 p.m. on Thursday.
Oh.
How about that?
So if you're seeing the agenda for the first time on Friday and you see something you didn't know was going to be talked about, well, it's too late to speak to the council.
Now, I don't do math, but I think that means you can't, right?
That means you can't. Yeah. So city council had their agenda review on Monday. They did have a work session afterward to talk about other things, but they ended up talking about the flag policy anyway. So here's how it goes. If you've got one flagpole in the city of Tupelo on city property, which would be, for example, all the fire stations, only the U.S. flag will fly on said one flagpole. If you have more than one flagpole, so City Hall, for example, which has two flagpoles in front of it, the state flag must fly on one of the two flagpoles. Now, to some extent, this just keeps current policy in place. Or what I should say is it keeps current practice in place. There was no formal policy, but the policy we've got now pretty much doesn't change anything, except at the police station. So the new police station that hasn't opened yet and has been delayed due to, you know, like sprinklers going off in the building unexpectedly, has three flagpoles in front of it. Under the policy, that means one of the three flagpoles will have the Mississippi State flag on it.
Surely we could put something up in its place. I mean, if the Cubs win tonight, we could just fly the W.
It comes back to the Cubs, doesn't it, Derek?
Well, I could just think of 100 other things we could fly.
So here's the deal. The current, now obviously the police are currently renting a facility over by the airport. It only has one flagpole in front of it. Mm-hmm. Only the U.S. flag is flying. When the police were at their previous facility on Front Street, only one flagpole was in front of it. Only the U.S. flag was flying on it, I'm told. I wasn't here at the time. So they're moving back to Front Street at a different facility with three flagpoles now. So, you know, basically this is the point where practice is changing. So the policy pretty much keeps what's been happening in place, except due to the flagpole arrangement in front of the new police station, there will be a Mississippi State flag that is in what was the historic African-American Shake Rag community. That's not sitting too well with some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's been the reaction that you've gotten so far. I know Willie Jennings and Nettie Davis voted against it.
Right. The two black council members voted against it. Willie Jennings did offer an amendment that would, his amendment wasn't going to change what is happening now. His amendment would have kept up all the state flags that currently exist, but he wanted to exclude the new police station on the basis that it is in, you know, what was during the segregation era, the black community, and even now remains a majority African-American community. Five of the city council members voted against that amendment on a racially divided vote. All the white members against it, the amendment, all the black members for it.
But four of the five did say they would like to see the design at least changed.
Right. So by my count, six of the Tupelo city council members have expressed the desire to see a new Mississippi state flag. That would be obviously the two black council members want a new flag that does not have the Confederate battle emblem. And then four of the five council members that voted to keep the flag flying now say that they're only doing that because they feel as an institution of the state, we need to respect the state symbols, but that they personally desire a new flag and have indicated they'll back a resolution requesting that the state legislature address the issue. Only Councilman Mike Bryan declined to tell me whether he supports the flag as it is or if he wants a new flag. So Councilman Bryan repeatedly told me, quote, it's not an issue for me. I asked him if that means that he would just as soon keep the flag design as it is. He repeated, it's not an issue for me. So that's where we stand. You know, the Mississippi state flag is going to stay in place on municipal property. The city council seems likely to make a request to the legislature to do something to get the flag to where it represents more of the state population. Obviously, you know, the people that are happy, some of the people that are happy about their action last night wouldn't be happy about such a resolution. And the ones that are happy, not happy about last night's action to keep the state flag, have told me they feel that, you know, the resolution is just going to be kind of disingenuous. We'll see how it all shakes out.
I have a semi-serious question. You mentioned the places, city
how
property.
How this affects Game 7? I want to know that, too.
I'm sure you're going to ask that one. City property that has only one flagpole, you said, will not fly the state flag. So say if you're a fire station and say the people there want to fly the state flag, could they just, like, buy a second flagpole? And who would pay for it?
Oh, see, that's a good question. It also brings up the question of the two of the three flagpoles at the police department. You know, when I was talking to Council President Lynn Bryan on Monday, I asked him whether he thought putting a state flag in front of the police department in a historically African-American community would incite racial tensions, and he told me, well, it may or may not. And then he actually told me, you know, it probably would have been a better idea just to have issued a change order and only have put one flagpole in front of the police department. But there are three there now, and I think it would get ugly if someone tried to remove two of the three flagpoles. So
yeah.
And it's a veto-proof majority, last night's policy, so really nothing Mayor Shelton can do about this.
Yes, and so the Mayor Shelton did speak out against this.
Right. He wasn't what I would say super in your face about it, but he did issue a statement last night after the vote in which he said that he thought the City Council of Tupelo had missed an opportunity to show leadership in the state.
Yeah.
And to, you know, make a statement about Tupelo as a community. It would appear he's opposed the council's action and opposes the design of the state flag.
All right, good stuff, Caleb. And we'll continue to track this story. You can read his work at thedjournal.com and in today's journal. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
And be sure to look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan. You can find new episodes every Wednesday. You can watch the webcast live around 11 a.m. at djournal.com. Then the podcast version drops later that day. You can listen to it for free in iTunes, podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. So look for a new episode of Prep Rally today. And for Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans, check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode each Thursday afternoon in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and the Rebels. Listen to it for free on iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
And don't forget, you can wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break. Quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a five-minute video. Shows are posted every Monday morning, every Monday through Friday morning, rather, at 7 a.m. You can watch them for free at any time at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices.
Hey, let's welcome Michaela Morrison to the program to talk about the Affordable Care Act and cost-benefit analysis.
Well, always a good time.
Well, hey, it's that time. Open enrollment's open, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Open enrollment has begun. It runs through January 31st.
So a lot of people are like, yay, Obamacare. Other people are like, boo, we hate it. It's terrible. In Mississippi, what's kind of the consensus? Has it helped?
Mississippi has not seen all of the gains that other places have seen because the full Affordable Care Act wasn't implemented, that you didn't
right.
see expanded access for people who would qualify for Medicaid, or other states have kind of done that expansion differently by paying for insurance premiums for that population that falls in the gap below where subsidies
yeah.
would kick in.
Yeah.
I would say, so, I mean, just to give you, there are more people with insurance in Mississippi now.
Right, right.
You know, kind of 2000 through 2010, you know, you were right between 17 and 19% of Mississippians had no health insurance.
Right.
And now that's down to 12.7%.
Okay.
You know, that's still, of course, lagging the nation. But there, it's one of those things where, I mean, the coverage definitely helps because your people, whether they have insurance or not, can go to most hospitals and be taken care of. But if they don't have any way to pay,
right.
that means everybody who is paying is helping to pay their bills.
Right.
So you're kind of paying for it one way or another.
Right. And you've got the premium set to go up, but still, even in Mississippi, that's still Mississippi's still going to be below most southeastern states.
Mississippi will still be significantly below most southeastern states, with an average for a 40-year-old non-smoker running about $282 a
yeah.
month, and that's before subsidies kick in. And roughly 93% of the people who end up buying on the exchange in Mississippi qualify for subsidies and tax credits.
Right.
So, and that's the pretty much the your after for people who qualify for subsidies and tax credits, it will remain pretty level.
Right, right.
Depending on where you fall and what kind of policy you're buying. You know, things that have people worried is that because the Mississippi hasn't expanded, the hospitals are not seeing the stabilization of...
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the healthcare side of it. No, they're not really...
They haven't seen the benefits that people in other states have seen.
Right. The reimbursement rates for like Medicare, Medicaid,
remain
flat.
Well, yeah. The part of the trade-offs with the Affordable Care Act is that Medicare reimbursements would either be sequestered by 2% or they would be cut or remain flat so that, you know, there's less money going out in the system. The idea is that if people have insurance when they're younger, they'll take better care of themselves and they won't cost as much. They won't have a lot of deferred medical needs when they get to 65 and can qualify for Medicare, or at least that's the theory. But the hospitals haven't seen the benefit of more people covered, but they're dealing with lower reimbursements for Medicare.
Right. Shane Spees of North Mississippi Health Services says we're financing the system and not getting any of the benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, and then in 2018, cuts are set to begin to the disproportionate share monies, mm-hmm. which are go to hospitals that take care of higher percentages of Medicaid and charity care patients.
Right.
So that will hurt a lot of Mississippi hospitals when that goes in. But then there's also the insurance department is especially concerned about people who have these transitional policies that were grandfathered in. If you're, these are primarily individuals and small employers that elected to keep the policies they had in place when the Affordable Care Act went into effect in 2010.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of the leash has played out. The department or Centers for Medicaid and Medicare has said they are not going to renew the extension for them after this December.
Yeah.
So basically, if they don't have a change of heart and the insurance commissioner is, in fact, pleading that case, that they need more time to help folks transition.
Yeah.
That they could see some really significant increases, which could turn around and put it out of reach for folks. There are some other places that folks could be. The insurance department actually has a program, an exchange just for small employers, so they can access some of the benefits that large groups have, that potentially could be a place where folks could get some shelter. But that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, it is. Well, you had a good story in Sunday's Journal and at djournal.com, good in-depth story explaining all that situation. So y'all go give it a read. Michaela, appreciate your time as always.
Always a fun time.
I have a follow-up question. I just want to, how will this impact Game 7 tonight?
Well, given that I believe they expanded Medicaid in Illinois, people should be fine if they stumble on the steps of Wrigley Field.
Or if they hurt themselves if the Cubs lose.
Or hurt somebody else.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you. I'd like to invite you to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons about 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. 2016 legislative session is over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. Time now for today's news memo. For more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Senior pranks are a long-standing tradition among students finishing up their high school years, but things got out of hand in Houston earlier this week. Authorities are investigating a vandalism incident involving spray-painted graffiti and a dead deer. Police were called to the school around 11 p.m. Sunday, with kids scattering as a patrol car pulled up. Police found a deer hanging from framework leading into the high school, as well as profanity spray-painted on the sidewalk and columns of the school. The case is being investigated by the Houston Police Department, and because the deer was shot out of season, the Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks is also looking into it. No arrests have been made yet, but students were interviewed by police on Tuesday. Houston High has traditionally been a target for minor vandalism by senior students, but as Houston Police Chief Billy Voiles noted, quote, apparently it got out of hand this year.
A group of Tupelo High seniors is trying to have a little fun while also serving the community. Dakin Reed, Josh Martin, Brandy Reynolds, and Rachel Dudas will host an event on Thursday night to raise funds for college scholarships. The event will be held at the Tupelo Farmers Depot and will feature food and live entertainment. It serves as the senior project for the 4 Tupelo students. Their hope is to raise enough money to provide scholarships for 2 or 3 THS seniors in the Boys and Girls Clubs. The senior project is a yearly requirement for the THS graduating class that focuses on community service. Thursday's event starts at 7 p.m. and tickets are $25 and $10 for students. Food will be provided by Park Heights and South, and 2 drink menus minimum will provide live music. Reed said the group hopes this event to become an annual tradition. She said they wanted to use their project to help the community, their school, and a great organization like the Boys and Girls Clubs.
The accolades keep rolling in for a Tupelo school teacher. Amanda Kulaba, art teacher at Lawhorn Elementary, has been named the Elementary Art Educator of the Year by the Mississippi Art Education Association. The group is an affiliate of the National Art Education Association. Kulaba said she was floored by the award, but perhaps she shouldn't have been surprised. Back in June, she received the Thad Cochran Distinguished Art Educator Award from the Mississippi Alliance for Art Education. Kulaba headed up the Lawhorn Arts Festival last spring, and she has contributed to a Mississippi education blog as well as art education magazines. Kulaba said that awards aren't her reason for teaching, but she admits that being recognized for her work and passion is affirming. She will receive her latest award on November 12th during a ceremony at Tougaloo College.
The Mantagee High School Marching Band brought home its first state championship on Saturday. The 69-member band finished atop the 2A division at the MHSAA/MBA State Marching Championship at Clinton High School. It was the third time in as many years that the band had competed in the contest, having finished third in each of the previous tries. The championship put a cap on their successful fall for the Mustang Band, which fared well in three previous competitions leading up to state. The band's scores of superior overall at those shows earned it a spot in Clinton. Band director Dana Gray said there were a lot of tears when band members learned they had won, and most of them wore their championship medals to school on Monday.
A Tupelo man charged with killing a cab driver has pleaded not guilty. Leonte Gates was arraigned Monday in Lee County Circuit Court. The 23-year-old entered not guilty pleas to capital murder, as well as three other felony charges. Gates was ordered held without bond. Assistant District Attorney John Weddle said the state intends to seek the death penalty in this case. Gates is accused of robbing and killing cab driver Charlie Boo Williams of Tupelo on May 13th. He's also accused of two armed robberies in Tupelo while on the run. He surrendered to police on May 16th. Public defender Lori Basham said she intends to ask for additional public funds in order to secure more attorneys and experts in preparing Gates' defense. Circuit Judge Jim Pounds agreed to allow Basham more time before the case goes to trial, probably sometime next year. I want to remind you again that today's show is brought to you by Shoppers Value Foods, locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third-generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program, so the store now sells its groceries at 10% over cost, and that's allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. Along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, and better parking. So visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices.
Jenna Parsons joining us on this Wednesday to discuss the food section for today. Jenna, my eyes are drawn to the box of Rice-A-Roni on the front page. That's the San Francisco treat.
I actually like Rice-A-Roni.
Me too.
It's one of Patrick's favorite things.
I love all forms of rice, pretty much.
I could eat rice every day.
I used to eat rice for breakfast with sugar on it. White now, rice with sugar.
I know people that do that, rice and sugar and butter sometimes, but I have eaten rice for breakfast, but not with sugar on it. Just rice and butter, rice and gravy.
Rice and sugar.
Chicken fried rice.
So good. Sorry.
He's drooling.
Thinking about rice.
And his eyes rolled back in his head.
So, yeah, that's the picture to go with this story about these seniors doing a senior project, as they're supposed to do.
Right.
I didn't have to do one of those, thank goodness. I would have failed it. But what are they trying to do? Trying to do something that they hope isn't just a one-time thing. It kind of continues after
they graduate. What they're doing is a food drive, canned goods and boxed goods. And a lot of times, groups around this community and other communities will do this around the holidays. They'll ask people at work, bring a couple of canned goods, drop them in a box, and we'll take them to a food pantry or to people in need. But what these kids are doing is they are putting these bins, and they're trash bins that they have, brand new trash bins that they have painted bright red, and they're going to put them in four stores, both Kroger's in Tupelo, Walmart at Barnes Crossing, and Todd's. And all year long, people, when they go into shop, can buy a couple of cans or boxes and drop them in the bins, and then once a month, four charities each, in theory every week, one of the four different charities will go and pick up the bin and whatever's in it,
cool,
and have it to share with their clients. And the charities are Sanctuary Hospice House, Helping Hands, St. Luke, and help me out here for the Salvation Army.
There you go. Okay. Well, that's really cool. And obviously the charities have gotten on board with this. I mean, it's really cool to see high school seniors take this kind of initiative.
Yes. First, they were just going to do Sanctuary Hospice House. They were going to do a food drive to help the people there prepare the food for the families that come to visit their loved ones and for the patients there. And so then they just thought, well, shoot, if we can help one, we can help more.
Yeah.
And I think the beauty of this is that it's not just during the holiday season, that they hope this goes on and on and on. And, you know, with the community support, it can.
Yeah.
They're going to get botulism if they just drop the can inside this big bin. Don't worry about that. Dented cans. Not that worried about it. It was just a funny
The can's not that big. It's not as big as the
It's not as big as the waste management. Oh, then we're fine, kids. Throw them against the wall and then put them in there. I don't like pork.
Pork is good.
But I see you've changed
anything that comes from
a good dish.
Oh, so you don't like bacon?
I like bacon.
Okay.
I don't like pork loin. That's where I was going with that.
I see. Okay.
I'll eat a pork chop.
Derek, it's the same thing.
It's not.
Oh, my Lord.
It's not. Until you're hospitalized from pork loin.
That's right. I forgot. And we won't go into that story here. Your wife might kill us. As she tried to kill you.
Nah.
The insurance money was ready to be distributed evenly. What dish did you change out from pork to chicken?
Well, I didn't.
Or you didn't, okay.
I didn't actually change it. We had just, I don't know what happened. We just were eating pork. It was like night after night. So I started looking for a recipe that did not involve pork and preferably chicken, and because we hadn't had chicken in a while. And I found a recipe for a lemon butter chicken that was absolutely delicious. And even though it's got butter and it's got cream, it also has lemon juice and it has spinach. So there are some redeeming qualities to it.
It evens out.
It evens out. But, yeah, you just...
I'm not hearing anything bad either way, though.
You brown the chicken in a little bit of butter, and then you make up this yummy sauce with more butter and garlic and chicken broth and whipping cream and Parmesan and lemon juice and thyme, and then you put the chicken back into that sauce and put it in the oven and cook it, and it comes out golden and yummy.
Mm. Now I'm drooling. That sounds excellent. You did not fix Sloppy Joe's last night, though, however.
No, but I think we may have them tonight after hearing you talk about them. Sloppy Joe's and tater tots.
We're watching Game 7 at Jenna's house tonight. Come on over, everybody. The address is. Your Cook of the Weeks, I always enjoy when you interview kids.
My mother-in-law called me this morning and said your Cook of the Week was a breath of fresh air.
Well, all right. There you go.
Yeah.
That says it. She, Meredith Hitt.
Yes.
11 years old.
Oh, precious.
She called the kitchen our kitchen.
She did what?
Did I read that right? She's like, Mom's in our kitchen.
Right.
So she wants her own kitchen. Mom's always in mine.
She wants her own kitchen. And I was mulling this when she piped up and offered that her older sister had gone to college and her bedroom was empty. So, I mean, there's the place for the kitchen. So.
There's your kitchen right there. What did she make for you?
She made French macarons. And sometimes when I interview kids, you know that there has been a lot of adult help and supervision in the kitchen, as there always should be if kids aren't able to do things themselves.
You hear that, kids?
But Meredith, she watches YouTube videos. She does watch the Food Network, but she watches YouTube videos.
That's the best way to learn things these days.
Yes, her mom said sometimes she has to take the phone away from her and say, you know, go outside and play.
I want to cook.
Read a book. But and her mom, Meredith, decided one day that she wanted to make fondant. She had seen some YouTube videos. Fondant's that really smooth icing that goes over fancy cakes.
I'm doing
cakes.
Good to make SpaghettiOs. This 11-year-old wants to make fondant.
Her mom, Carrie Ann, went to the next room, right there in the next room, taking a nap. And when she wakes up, Meredith had made a two-layer cake with fondant and all these decorations on top.
Is she up for adoption?
she's an amazing child. She makes her own angel food cakes. Oh. When you can, you know, I've never made a homemade angel food cake because the grocery stores make very nice ones.
Because you can buy those.
She makes.
That's how I feel about spaghetti. Is. Yeah,
these chocolate chip cookies that are really thin and crispy that are popular with her siblings. She can do just about anything.
She's going to go far.
She is. She wants to learn now, she said, to cook. She likes to do desserts and pastries
and cakes. She likes to
bake. Now she wants to learn to make appetizers and entrees. And
well, I mean, I have a very large kitchen if she would like to come over and utilize
it. She probably would. I mean,
it doesn't get touched very often.
You know, she wants her own kitchen. She didn't say it had to be in her house.
That's fine. We don't have to rent it out. There's just some sort of food exchange barter system here going on. Well, can make this happen.
Her grandparents had Comer's Restaurant. Have Comer's
Runs
Restaurant.
In the family.
And so if you want to meet Meredith in person, you can probably find her there because she's there just about every day.
I go there for breakfast sometimes. So.
Well, ask for her.
Make my eggs. Little girl, I read your story. Make my eggs. And a good information all around. One question, though. This the senior project that's happening, how does this affect Game 7 of the World Series?
More on that tomorrow.
All right. We'll find out. Jenna, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Another fine show, Derek. And go Cubs. This is coming from a Cardinals fan. It's going to be entertaining either way. They win and all the Cubs fans are happy.
It's going to be fun.
I'll be happy for my Cubs friends. Or they lose. And if you're going to lose, it might as well be in spectacular fashion so we can keep the whole curse storyline alive. Okay? So as I said earlier.
You're a monster.
Keep an eye on Chris Bryant at third base.
I don't think you want the Cubs to win.
Oh, I do. But if they lose, I don't want it to be like 10-0. That's boring. I want to be entertained. Okay? And you know what I've said before, Derek? Sad fans make me happy. And can you imagine all the screenshots I'll be able to get?
See, you don't want the Cubs to win.
Of anguish.
You're an evil man. You're a horrible monster.
I'm going to have anguished fans either way.
There's going to be plenty of anguished Cleveland fans, although the fact that the Cavaliers just won a championship may, you know, make it not quite as
they got
terrible
already.
For them. And plus, they've won one like within the last 7 decades, unlike the Cubs.
I got your back, Derek.
Thank you.
Go Cubs.
I'm going for the Cubs, okay?
I'm going for the Cubs. But here's all the things that could go wrong.
But if they lose, I want them to suffer.
Just don't want to put that out there in the universe just yet. We're what, 8 hours away?
It'll be fine. As we talk, yes, thereabouts. So... that's it for the show.
All right.
Derek, I hope you have a good, pleasant evening.
Yeah, me too. We'll see how tomorrow morning's show goes.
We will.
It's either going to be high energy or I'm going to hate everybody.
Well, once again, we want to remind you that this show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, where you can get the ingredients for the recipes in today's food section. The Palmer brothers have worked hard on improving every area of the store to make customers' experiences even better than before and to save them money on quality name brand products. So visit the locally owned grocery store on East Main. You'll love the look, love the prices, and get helped by the same people you knew at Palmer's. Again, that's it for today. We'll have a new show tomorrow, Thursday. You can find us a variety of ways at memo.djournal.com. Stream it there or just download the episodes on your smartphone. If you have an iPhone, you can just open up that podcast app. Or if you don't have an iPhone, there are other podcast apps you can find like player.fm, Stitcher, Satchel, among others. So check us out. Follow us on Twitter at djournalmemo. I'm on Twitter at Brad Locke. Derek is on there at wderekrussell. Send him your well wishes for the Cubs.
And send no hate.
And if they lose, send them your condolences as well.
No goat gifs.
Hey, do y'all? Would it help if someone sacrificed a goat before the game tonight?
You don't know where I was before I came into work this morning.
Because there's that, and then there's the Murphy curse, which I read about last year, was not aware of.
Yeah.
All the times that the tragedy has struck the Cubs, somebody named Murphy was involved, including David Murphy last year in the playoff series with the Mets.
Let's just stop.
But I looked, and I could not find any Murphy connections to the World Series this year, to the Cubs or anything, to the Indians, and nobody named Murphy on the Indians. I even looked at the front office. Nobody named Murphy in the Indians' front office.
That's Murphy's Law.
Nobody employed by the Indians that I could tell with the name Murphy.
Glad
so I think you're clear of the Murphy curse, is
well,
what I'm saying.
God.
So it all comes down to a dead goat from 1945.
I'm leaving. Goodbye.
All right. We'll see y'all next time.